All right, welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McTougall.
And today on the show, we are going to spend pretty much, well, our entire time talking about the resignation of Jody Wilson-Raybould from cabinet. So buckle up, because there's a lot to talk about, and we all have opinions, and it's turned into a giant clusterfuck for the federal Liberals. But first, let's check in with Leanne and Mike down in Toronto and make sure that they've avoided any chairs tumbling off of balconies.
But can somebody explain to me why she did it? Like, I just don't understand. Is it, you know,
her lawyer stated that it was peer pressure.
It was, sorry, what?
Her lawyer stated that it was peer pressure.
She's
so
19.
She's already trying to throw her friends under the bus.
Yeah, well, she sure seemed pretty proud of herself walking out of the courthouse the other
day. She did, didn't she?
She looked so smug and happy, and she obviously had her lips injected with cement or something like that, because they looked like they were going to explode.
Yeah.
I wonder how long she could do in prison for this, if she even would go. She'll probably get a big fine and little else, but she could have killed somebody.
It really depends, I think, on if she has a history, like a criminal record, right? Like, if it's her first offense, I would doubt she does jail for it.
But speaking of possibly killing a career, let's get into the Jody.
There you go.
Big scandal, the SNC-Lavalin scandal.
Okay, I am not going to call it a scandal. It's a saga, or at best, an affair or a hiccup. Because
it's a scandal.
I hate the way Ottawa has to manufacture everything into a scandal. Like, even somebody called it like SNC-Lavalin Gate the other day, and I'm like, it's not fucking clever, okay? Watergate worked because it was a hotel. You don't get to add gate on the end of everything to make it sound somehow mysterious or exciting, at any rate. So lots of you have had questions for us this week about what the SNC-Lavalin scandal is all about. So I'm actually going to, because Mike actually wrote our outline and then we decided not to go through it, I'm going to ask Mike to explain the SNC-Lavalin scandal that I just
Thanks for prepping me that I'm doing that. That's fantastic.
All right, I can do it. I don't mind doing it.
I'll do it.
Leanne, do you want to do it?
Leanne can do it, but I apologize. It is not a scandal. I said scandal. The SNC-Lavalin affair. Leanne, would you like to tell our audience?
You know, it's complicated. Honestly, I'm having trouble following it because there's so many strands. But basically, it's this. SNC-Lavalin, Quebec, huge Quebec company. A lot of Quebec pensioners have a shitload of money with SNC-Lavalin. So there is a understandable desire for the federal government to want to ease this company's burden. They cleaned house. They got rid of all the badasses who caused them all the problems by doing illegal, terrible things with Libya. Anyway, SNC-Lavalin wants to avoid prosecution via this new thing called deferred prosecution. And Jody, the former justice minister, is alleging that the PMO pressured her to allow that, like to let them go through the process that way. A lot of companies in a lot of countries in the world are allowed to pay heavy fines rather than going through the terrible long ordeal of a criminal trial, right?
Yeah, so they get, essentially what happens in the deferred prosecution agreement is you get levied with a heavy fine, and the people that are responsible for the crime. And in this case, the company was charged, SNC-Lavalin, was charged back in 2015 with corruption and fraud because they apparently tried to purchase influence from officials in Muammar Gaddafi's government between 2001 till 2011.
Right.
And they're also accused of defrauding Libyan organizations at the same time. So,
but since then, they've cleaned house and they've taken a lot of measures to right the wrong. So, you know, maybe there's an argument in favor of allowing them to go through this deferred prosecution process. And it's certainly understandable why the government of Canada, who needs to win Quebec, any party running to be reelected has to win Quebec, might be sympathetic and might want them to go that route. It makes sense to me. But anyway, she objected. She fought against it. She was then, months later, shuffled out of the job that she loved, and she is suggesting that it's due to this SNC-Lavalin case, which she would not sign off on. But she didn't quit till after the demotion, which is curious. And another thing I find weird, and the question that is yet to be answered, why did Trudeau demote her now? Like, is it because she was fighting with him on this? We don't know. But I think, to me, that's the biggest question that needs to be answered. And it's also, it seems like a really stupid self-inflicted wound to me. The House is rising in June and you're heading into an election. Why demote her in January? Well, just hold on to her for a couple of months. And then after you, if you win another mandate, then you reshuffle and it looks like it's totally legit. We want to give new people new spots and new places, right? It was a dumb, self-inflicted move. And anyway, that is the gist of the scandal. There was also a lot more to it than what I've just said, but
so,
she's alleging she was pressured to sign off on this thing for SNC-Lavalin. And then months later, she got demoted. Then she quits. And so we're trying to figure out how they're all connected. And no one quite knows yet. Anyway.
Well, apparently Bob Fyfe knows it all, because Bob Fyfe is the one, the Parliamentary Bureau's chief for the Globe and Mail, who broke the story 7 days ago, a week ago. But just so everybody's clear, we've not always had this deferred prosecution agreement in place. This actually came into being last June when the then omnibus budget bill was passed. In that budget bill, omnibus budget bills, as a bit of an aside, are something that the Liberals, when they were in opposition and then in third party, decried when Stephen Harper used, but they found them quite convenient as of late to put a lot of things in there. And one of the things they put in there was the introduction of a deferred prosecution agreement. So after it's passed into law last June, the SNC-Lavalin was informed, I'm looking at your outline, Mike, that it would not be allowed to participate in deferred prosecution for the current charges against that existed against their company regarding the Libyan issue, the one that we mentioned earlier. And within a week, they had appealed that decision. Now, it's also important to note that the lobby registry shows that they've met with pretty much everybody in Ottawa, whether they are, you know, a federal Liberal or a federal Conservative. So it's a little hard. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Leanne is right. There's a lot of moving parts to this. But basically they've pushed really hard to get their deferred prosecution agreement to be able to move forward so that their business doesn't collapse. The Liberals are likely to inclined to help them out. And then, frankly, so would the Conservatives be. And that's why.
All of them would.
Of course. I mean, Andrew Scheer is the last person that should be talking about anything related to scandal or affairs or whatever else, because he also sat down with the CEO to talk about this criminal case. So let's just, you know, let's get a bit of perspective here. But yeah, so let's go through this one by one. Jody Wilson-Raybould, I agree with what you said, Leanne, and I've said it on my Twitter feed. You know, I have a hard time believing, first of all, yes, this is a self-inflicted wound, but I really find it a little bit much that a prime minister can't move any minister he wants, when he wants, or when she wants, because they're underperforming, or frankly, because he just wants to get them out of there. It's not her purview, and she got herself into a snit, and you could see it, and you've got to wonder where the principle of this all went. But before we do all that, I want to play one thing, and I know we don't normally play clips anymore, but I do think that this whole thing kind of encapsulates the muck that we're in. So I'm going to play this clip. You guys watched it or heard it earlier, and then we can discuss all of this stuff. So go ahead, JP.
Canadians don't understand that it is normal for the Prime Minister's office and the Office of the Attorney General and the Attorney General herself to have robust conversations. People are trying to make things out to be sinister when they're actually normal in the course of government. And I want people to understand where that line actually is, and then we can study specifically if that line was crossed in this instance.
How are you going to know where the line is in this case without talking to Jody Wilson-Raybould?
Okay, so what I've said from the beginning is our witness list is not exhaustive.
But there's no commitment to calling her before the committee.
There's not a commitment at this stage because Jody Wilson-Raybould, though a very important part of this case, has the issue of solicitor-client privilege, cabinet confidentiality, and we're waiting to see what Minister Lametti recommends with respect to the request by the Prime Minister to review it. And I'm not sure that we would want to call Minister Wilson-Raybould or the former Minister Wilson-Raybould in the event she can't speak to the issue. So I'm not closed to it, but right now we're not saying no and we're not saying yes.
Well, it's tragic for her, and I think it's tragic for the country. I mean, she upholds integrity and dignity and the rule of law, and she gets kicked in the teeth and moved down to Veterans Affairs, as important as that is. Reality is it's the armpit near the armpit of the cabinet. Indian Affairs is the armpit of the cabinet. She's got to pass through two time zones now to get to the prime minister. Low budgets, low treasury board, low everything. And I'm quite surprised. I would have expected, had I been her, I would have resigned as soon as that demotion took place. And that was a bloody insult to her and Indians, I think, across the country. But she's a little more level-headed than I am. And then I think she finally realized that, you know, that's what she had to do in order to maintain the integrity and to make this fight on behalf of all of us.
Justin Trudeau's ethical lapses and his handling of this latest scandal has thrown his government into chaos.
No, it hasn't.
If it wasn't obvious before, Ms. Wilson-Raybould's resignation makes it crystal clear that Justin Trudeau is trying to hide the truth with regards to the SNC-Lavalin affair. Yesterday, he tried to reassure Canadians that nothing unethical took place. In fact, he said that Ms. Wilson-Raybould's presence in cabinet should speak for itself. Well, given now how that has changed, we can only conclude otherwise. Again, I call on Justin Trudeau, in the strongest possible terms, to waive any solicitor-client privilege he believes he may have in this case, so that Ms. Wilson-Raybould can speak. The longer he refuses to do this, the more guilty he appears to Canadians. He has a responsibility to answer these questions directly in a manner where parliamentarians can hold him to account for his actions and for the actions of people in his office.
I'd just like to start by saying how sad I am by her decision. I consider Minister Wilson-Raybould to be a friend and a valued colleague. We got to know each other during the 2015 election when both of us felt that our ridings in downtown Vancouver and downtown Toronto were quite similar. And we talked sometimes during the campaign to compare our experiences. So I consider her a friend and valued colleague, and I hope she will continue to be a friend and valued colleague. Having said that, I am really sad and very disappointed by her decision. As a minister myself, I have had to handle some difficult issues. And I have always felt that if I were ever under any kind of pressure to act in a way that I felt was not consistent with the national interest, that I could always raise that issue, that situation, directly with the Prime Minister. Indeed, I have always felt, and I continue to feel, that it would be my duty to do so. The Prime Minister has my full support. He is a great leader of our team.
Jody Wilson-Raybould and I had a conversation in September in which I emphasized to her that the decision the decision she makes as Attorney General, particularly in this matter, are her decision, and that I was not directing or pressuring her. If she felt that she had received pressure, it was her obligation, her responsibility to come to talk to me, and she did not do that in the fall. And she continued to choose to serve in this government as Veterans Affairs Minister when I made a cabinet shuffle.
So, those were in order. Anthony Housefather, who is the chair, he was the first one you heard, the chair of the House of Commons Justice Committee, which passed a motion, a Liberal motion yesterday, to bring a few folks before the committee to talk about this. Not among those people they'll be calling are Jody Wilson-Raybould, Jerry Butts, or Mario Bruchard, I believe his name is, who's Special Assistant for Quebec. Yeah, but okay, but in fairness, having watched that whole... I mean, that was Housefather.
Sorry.
The second one was Bill Wilson, who is her father, we can talk about him later. The third one was Andrew Scheer. The fourth one was Chrystia Freeland, which, frankly, I'm actually quite glad to see that they're getting people like Chrystia Freeland, Marco Mendicino, and others out to kind of run defense on this because they're good communicators. And the last one, of course, was the Prime Minister. But let's talk about this. All right. too many clips. That's what I just got a note from everybody. But yes, that is too much clips, too many clips. Okay. So, I apologize, everybody. I apologize. Okay. All right. Hoopla and hysterics notwithstanding, let's ask this simple question. Who do you believe? What did Jody Wilson-Raybould get pressured by the PMO? Yes or no? Who do you believe?
I think I believe everybody. I think maybe they did pressure, but that's what the PMO does when they've got a hot potato issue and a cabinet minister has to make a decision on it. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're all telling the truth.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it's a big fucking deal. What I think the Liberals are, sorry, I'm going on too much, but honestly, they need to let everybody who wants to appear by not allowing people to appear. They are prolonging the story. Just fucking get it out there, table a new budget, change the conversation and move on into the election. Like, it's so stupid to not let people appear. That's honestly, a friend of mine said the other day, the Liberal Party, they always only defeat themselves. The only party who can defeat the Liberals are the Liberals. They always do it to themselves. Canadians largely want to vote for them because that's where we are ideologically and fiscally, and they always fucking blow it with a self-inflicted wound. Anyway, Mike. Go on, Mike. I'm sorry.
You know, I see it as there's two, although it's all one big story, there's two distinct things that are happening here. There's the SNC-Lavalin situation, and then there is a situation going on right now with Minister Wilson-Raybould. So effectively, when they demoted her into Veterans Affairs, the Liberals committed what now really kind of looks like a smear campaign against her, where they kind of leaked that she was difficult to work with and she wasn't good to her subordinates. And we talked about this on a previous episode we did in the show, the one where Leanne was all hopped up on Percocet. she hurt her foot. Anyways, go listen to that episode. And we kind of talked about this where we said, this is kind of weird, but maybe she is like not a good person or whatever. So they, I think Leanne is right. They probably did pressure her because they can do that. And it, like everyone says, it is kind of normal that that happens. And she obviously didn't appreciate it. So they get rid of her and then they kind of leak this bad stuff about her. And then they get surprised. And then Justin Trudeau goes in front of the cameras and says, well, she's in my cabinet, so obviously she's happy. I think her resigning was the ultimate boss move on her part, because she's clearly showing him that, you know, you don't have that much control over me, which is true. With the other side of it, though, the whole deferred prosecution and the SNC-Lavalin situation, I agree that, like, we know that deferred prosecution is something that most countries do. Canada is a bit of an outlier on this. However, you know, we do know that SNC-Lavalin successfully, as it turned out, lobbied to have deferred prosecution entered into the Canadian system, and then they were rejected for it. So, like, the Trudeau government obviously made a deal, which, again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that deal, but Jody Wilson-Raybould just didn't play along with what the government was doing. And while the government can look at that and say, hey, you're not a team player, she's obviously looking at that and saying, I'm the justice minister. This is my job. Why are you trying to interfere with my job? And I would add two things. One thing I find really funny, which is what SNC-Lavalin was accused of doing is exactly what the Bluth family was accused of doing in Arrested Development season 3 when they went after Saddam Hussein's government. So any Arrested Development fans, you'll probably find that funny. But the second part I want to point out is, if this was American, let's say the Mueller report came out and we found out that Donald Trump was trying to pressure his own Justice Department to go easy on, say, the Trump Organization or another company that Trump had ties to, we would be having special episodes of the pod to call for his impeachment. So I think that we need to, you know, just because it's Justin Trudeau and we do support him, I think we do need to take a step back for a second and kind of look at this a little bit as we would look at it if it was somebody else. And the third thing, sorry, I'm talking too much. Why was Andrew Scheer so out of breath in that clip?
He sounded like he had bad dry mouth.
He was like,
That's how he is when he has his claws in a potential fucking election winning issue. Imagine how he's going to be on the campaign trail. Like, he is fucking terrible.
Yeah,
when the spotlight is on him. Like, he sounded like he was guilty of something. He's fucking shaking and trembling. Like, what the fuck, man?
It did. But the election has changed. In my opinion, it used to be, you know, Andrew Scheer was trying to convince people to vote him into power. But now what he needs to do is convince people to vote out Justin Trudeau. And that's where I'm a little scared with the election.
So I have a hard time believing Jody Wilson-Raybould, not because, you know, and let's be clear, I think there's a lot of things happening here where if you are not believing Jody Wilson-Raybould, then somehow you are anti-Indigenous or anti-woman or because she seems to be being held up as some poster child, not only of integrity and principle, but, you know, she apparently represents every Indigenous person in this country. I mean, and I get it. I get the symbolism. But I think that there is something very interesting that was written the other day by journalist Dale Smith, and I'm going to read it. He says, as for Wilson-Raybould's departure, this is a great piece on his website, Routine Proceedings, but this is just a clip from it. He says, as for Wilson-Raybould's departure, some of the reporting is getting a bit cringeworthy, particularly how they keep reaching out to her father for comment. I can think of no other ministerial demotion or resignation that sought comment from their parents, for what it's worth. As well, the fact that the reaction from Indigenous leaders as this being some kind of betrayal also leaves me a bit unsettled, because it was no secret that things were not being well managed in her office at Justice. And the narrative seems to be to reinforce the notion that it's not the quality of the job being done, only the symbolism of the person holding the office. That particular lens on what has taken place over the last few days seems to be absent, while Wilson-Raybould is tactical in her silence. And I agree with that. You know, like, first of all, she's clearly having a great time with this. I mean, you know, I'm a little bit tired of the drama of having to watch cameras following her while she walks door to door. I don't believe her. And I don't believe her because you can't just discover your integrity and your principles after you get shuffled to a cabinet post you didn't want. And I don't really care what the rationale was for why a prime minister moved a minister, because that is the prerogative of the prime minister. And she herself said it when she was at Rideau Hall. It is up to the prime minister under our system of government to make a choice as to who he wants at a certain role. She had an option. She was apparently offered Indigenous services, which Jane Philpott was vacating to go to Treasury Board. She chose not to take it because she has worked against the Indian Act her entire life. She's opposed the Indian Act. Fair. That's a principled stance. She could have said, you know what? I'm not interested. I'm leaving cabinet. She chose to take the other. Then she went, allegedly, and leaked a story to Bob Fyfe about pressure. Do I believe that she was spoken to about it? Sure. It just as much as, you know, 50 other people across the government, including in the opposition, were spoken to by SNC-Lavalin about this deferred prosecution agreement. Was it pressure? No. Would she have a conversation as Minister of Justice, not as Attorney General, but as Minister of Justice with her boss, the Prime Minister? I should fucking hope so. There's a lot of people that depend on that company, not only for their pension, but their actual livelihood right now. And in Quebec, it's a big deal. And if you look at how it's being portrayed in Quebec, this is not a scandal in Quebec. In Quebec, everyone's like, holy shit, I hope this thing doesn't go tits up, because we're going to be in a situation where we lose the backbone or a key point of the backbone of our provincial economy and our national economy. So do I believe her? No. And I don't believe her, not because I don't think that they had conversations about it, but I think it's very rich when you get a post that you don't like, that you suddenly have, you know, an epiphany.
Yeah.
About principle and integrity. That should not have to be something that you shed. If you were concerned about it then, you had an obligation to the country to resign if this was really going on, and you didn't. And it has nothing to do with you being an Indigenous woman. It has nothing to do with anything like that. So, Bill Wilson, shut up. Nobody wants to hear from you.
Cameron, but there's two things that we need to add to that. First of all, life can come at you fast, right? Maybe she didn't want to make a decision because she wanted to sit down and think about what her options were, and she didn't want to make a knee-jerk decision to just resign on the spot out of anger. But we have to remember that this whole, I'm calling it a scandal, really only broke like a week ago. And initially, Trudeau said, no, didn't happen. And then he kind of softened. He's like, well, we might
no,
have
he never. No, he never said it didn't happen. He said, we never directed her to do anything.
His position on it has, over the 3 days of like Friday, Saturday, Sunday of last weekend, he progressively kind of open to the idea that, yeah, we had conversations. I mean, we can play those clips too if we have them. I'm not saying that Justin Trudeau is, you know, completely trying to pull the wool over everyone's eyes, but I don't think it's as simple as, hey, she should have quit when she had the chance. I know if my job gave me a demotion tomorrow, I wouldn't quit right away because I'd want to sit down and kind of think about, you know, hey, what just happened? What could I have done differently? Is there any way I can change this? You know, I want to think about my options. And if she's the type of person that likes to kind of take a step back before she acts, I see no problem with that because we're not in her position.
So Stephen Lawton's, who's a brilliant lawyer on Twitter, and he's helping do this quite well, like in terms of guiding people through this. In response to that last clip we heard about Trudeau saying that he'd spoken to Jody Wilson-Raybould in September, he says, note the time frame. The conversation is in September, just before the deferred prosecution the director of public prosecutions, rather, rejected SNC-Lavalin's request for a DPA on October 9th, which would have been the optimal time to intervene if the AG was going to. My point being, since people are missing it, is that the AG did not intervene in time. If she was going to do it, then theoretically you replace her immediately, not 4 months later. Since that didn't happen, it puts the whole pressure and motives theory into question. And I agree. I just don't think you wait that long. You dump her then.
Well, but it would have been the same. We would have had the same scandal then. You dumped her then. She would still complain that she got dumped because she wouldn't give in to the pressure.
Good point.
Right?
Yeah.
The same problem. My issue is this. I think they're fucking bad managers. You've got a problematic cabinet minister, and the word is she could be difficult. She had a bit of an attitude problem. Why demote her now? Like, I'm sure if they could go back and do anything differently, they would have just fucking left her where she is because the house is rising in June and you're heading into an election. It was a bad management move to demote her now. You know she's got issues, apparently. Her didn't play well with others, whatever the reason is. I would like somebody to explain to me why she was demoted. If it wasn't for the pressure on SNC-Lavalin months later, then why?
Well, because,
why now?
Because,
and yes, I know it's the Prime Minister's prerogative, Cameron, but you also, if you've ever been in management, you know it's not as easy as just fucking finally having enough of somebody and saying, fuck you, you're demoted. You have to look at the big picture.
Sure, but
well,
the Prime Minister, if he were to, but Leanne, if he were to go out and say exactly why he fired her, let's assume that it has nothing to do with this at all. Let's assume that he was like, yeah, exactly. She's a shitty manager. She has a bad attitude. She doesn't play well with others. All of the things that we're hearing leaking out of PMO. Imagine how that would look.
I know. I'm saying he shouldn't have demoted her at all. Now the question is being asked, why did you? This is the big question. If he hadn't demoted her, and if he'd waited till after the election, none of these questions would be being asked. But now, to me, that is the big question that he is now being forced to answer that he will not answer. If it had nothing to do with SNC-Lavalin, and we all agreed, I mean, at our Christmas episode, we all agreed she's one of his strongest cabinet ministers. I guess we didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. But because he's done it, that's the big question. And that's the question he can't answer. And it's a stupid, self-inflicted wound because it's not just about demoting somebody because you get fed up with them. Anybody who's been in a place where somebody who's been demoted knows you got to look at the whole fucking big picture. What are the repercussions of if we demote her now? Is there a risk that she might turn on us publicly? You got to weigh all that stuff. This seemed like a huge risk factor.
Well, I think that
if they knew she had an attitude problem, that she might then go to the media. So obviously she's the vice source. Why? What kind of stupid management is that you don't assess the potential risk? There's always a risk.
Sure, but in fairness, she accepted a cabinet post. So you assume that when somebody accepts a cabinet post and everything that goes on with it, that
they knew she was pissed off.
Oh, of
Everybody
course.
Knew she was pissed but off. You know what? They knew she was going to be pissed off. They knew that it was a slap in the face to her.
Well, it's a slap in the face, frankly, to our veterans to have her father going out and shitting all over veterans' affairs as a shitty demotion of a department.
It
makes me mad, Mike, because you can't have it both ways. You can't have daddy running interference for her and then on the flip side say, this is a strong woman and all this. You think that this isn't coordinated? Come on.
But this don't bring vet. This has nothing to do with veterans. That's like saying that kneeling for the national anthem has something to do with veterans. It does not. This has to do with stuff that we probably don't know about, because Leah makes a great point. Unless Trudeau is literally the worst manager of all time, which I don't think that he is, there's clearly information that hasn't been released yet, which is to why she was demoted. And until we know that information, we can't comment on why her father is talking and what she's thinking about. But it's not about veterans. So that's just a... If we have to get into, as political commentators or whatever you want to call it, try to push veterans into this picture, then we're losing the argument, because this has nothing to do with
veterans. Only bringing it in because he wants to say that somehow representing veterans is a kick in the teeth. Those are his words. He called it the armpit of cabinet. But
he said that Indigenous Affairs is the armpit
of
cabinet.
But what do we care? Like, he's not in government, so why do we care?
Well, he apparently cares, and so do the media. But let's move to another question. How do we feel this is, what does this do to the Prime Minister's attempts at reconciliation? He did say in that same clip, but we didn't hear it, is that reconciliation is bigger than one person, but he pretty well derailed this, and what does it do to him?
Yes.
I'm not sure, because as you point out, she opposed the Indian Act. I don't know enough. I'm not an Indigenous person myself. I thought Tanya Talaga's piece in The Star was really good, though. There's obviously going to be some tension now, right? But I don't know if I was an Indigenous person. Do I view her as someone aspirational? Do I or don't I? I don't know. So I guess it just depends on where you stand on the Indian Act and all sorts of other things. But certainly, let's not... This is the other thing that we've sort of been discussing offline. The elephant in the room for me, this could be the reason that she hung on and it took her so long to decide, and why she's so upset that she got demoted, is like, no, this is a fucking big deal that we had our first Indigenous justice minister and attorney general. That was a fucking big deal. Mm-hmm. And it obviously meant something to her, right? And she was proud of herself, rightfully so. So I think that possibly played in to all sorts of things. The reason why she didn't quit right away, the reason why she was so pissed off. Like, it was a bit of a personal humiliation to her. And it also might be the reason why she didn't complain or speak up when the pressure was happening. She was proud of having that job. So I feel for her on that part and on that point. And I don't think that we, as, you know, arguably privileged, certainly white people and arguably privileged white people, I guess that depends on where you are in the 1%. I don't think that we understand or can possibly understand what it felt like to her to lose that job. And I do think for that reason that it could cause Trudeau damage in the Truth and Reconciliation era. But honestly, I feel hesitant to even speak on it because I'm not an Indigenous person and I don't want to be one of these settlers with opinions. I don't know.
Mike?
I just think that this is going to be something that's going to follow Trudeau around for the entire summer. It's not going to go away. And I concur with Leanne. It's a self-inflicted wound, but to me, it doesn't make any sense because this isn't Trudeau acting on his own. He has advisors. One needs to believe that, you know, this was done through consultation and there were meetings about it. So the decisions that were made don't make sense. Therefore, there's information that we don't have. So that this is going to just come. It came fast. In the last week, a lot of information's come out, and maybe a lot more will come out in the next week. But I have a suspicion this is just going to drag all through the summer, and little rosy cheek Scheer is going to be out of breath every day trying to talk to the cameras. And Jagmeet Singh's going to try to talk to the cameras too if they don't push him out of the way in the hallway. And, you know, that's what's going to happen all summer.
And honestly, but they could change now that I'm in the crisis comms field, the advice we always give to companies and people that are in the crosshairs are change the conversation and do it fast. Like, if they just let everybody who wanted to appear before that hearing appear, just get it all out there.
But
fucking hit now.
But
and
Leanne,
then
that's not an impossibility. That is not the justice.
They didn't do it yesterday.
And you know what? Nor should they.
They didn't say that yesterday.
So first of all, the Justice Committee, it's very common. In fact, practice is that they go in camera when they decide on who they're going to invite. the people, Nathan Cullen, Lisa Raitt, Pierre Poilievre, those three, the two opposition conservatives, Raitt and Poilievre and Cullen, NDP, they all had an idea of who they wanted. They wanted to make a big show with the cameras there because that's the theater, right? But the actual way committees work is they go to the subcommittee on agenda or whatever it's called, and they do it in camera. It's an all-party thing. There's about four representatives, you know, one liberal, the conservative, the NDP, or I guess only three or four, whatever it is, and they decide, and then they come back with a motion. You don't do this kind of stuff in public.
I'm saying do it. I don't disagree with you. I'm saying let her come out today and say what she has to say. Take the hit, get, you know, dress the wound and move on. Because the longer it drags on, the more danger it's posing them as we get closer and closer to an election. Get it fucking out now.
So then
deal with it now. February. By March or April, it might be totally behind you. But you keep dragging it on and you don't want her to speak. You want her to shut up. You've got a really bad problem. It looks like you're trying to hide something.
So how do we feel the media's handled this? And I think,
well, I know
very
you're
poorly.
Unhappy about it, but I've been saying this since we started this pod. There's this bullshit that we have this liberal bias and we always want the fucking lefty, liberal, progressive parties to, you know, we give them an easy ride. Here's an example of how journalists want, when they smell blood, they pounce, and it doesn't matter if it's a conservative or a liberal or an NDP, or it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican. Journalists like scandal. They like the appearance of scandal. And here we have a perfect example. It's a story. I'm sorry, Cameron. It's
I'm not saying story. It isn't, but you know what? I will tell
you. And that Fife story was fucking good. Like,
yeah,
you may not have liked it, but
I didn't like
it. Obviously the source, and that's a story. If a cabinet minister who has been demoted is alleging that it's over pressure to protect a corporate entity, that is a fucking story.
Yeah. And nobody's going to defend corporations, right? Nobody.
Right? Like, that's a good story. I'm sorry, but it is. This whole thing is a good story. Well, it looks bad on the liberals. They've handled it terribly, and it's a fucking story.
So,
and I don't even give a shit that they're talking to her father. If her father wants to come out and spout off, fuck, of course you're going to get a quote from the father.
Yeah, but I'm,
of
first of all,
going to.
Dad needs to stay out of it. Just like I wouldn't want to hear from Margaret Trudeau if the prime minister wound up losing an election. I don't want to hear from it. I don't think anybody wants to hear from anybody's parents. Like, he's the last person I want to hear from. Bill Wilson, angry about something that happened 40 years ago with Pierre Trudeau. He's got an axe to grind. Okay. Like, come on. His default setting is angry. So fine. Now he's got something to be angry for. He's a great soundbite perfect, but nobody should have their father commenting or their mother about their performance in anything. Of course, you're going to be biased. You don't know shit about what went on.
Of course.
The more he talks, the more I'm starting to think, so what does he know that we don't know? Because she's gone on about this solicitor-client privilege and cabinet
competence.
Right,
maybe he knows a lot.
Yeah, and if so, then she's broken solicitor-client privilege and she's broken cabinet competence, and that's a whole other layer. So maybe he should
shut up. Which is why you keep talking to him. Which is why, as a journalist, you want to keep fucking talking to him, because maybe you get that story. Oh, how do you know that, Dad? Right?
So can I just say, one of the things that bugs me
is always the best disinfectant. You fucking report on anything that anybody is saying because there's something going on, and maybe it's going to be detrimental to her. But you don't fucking not talk to people.
So I have two quick things to add to this. One, how long before Jody Wilson-Raybould either crosses the floor to the NDP or the Conservatives, leaves the Liberal caucus to sit as an independent, or announces she's not running in this election?
I think that she needs to not do that. Like, she kind of, in my opinion, has the high ground right now, but there's a risk that a lot of people take when they get the high ground of, like, trying to climb a little bit higher, and it tends to backfire. I think that what she's done now is perfect, because it follows too on Trudeau's comments, and then the next day she resigns. I think that if I were her, I would just sit back and just let it come to me, as opposed to trying to push it even further.
Yeah, I think I actually think she is going to cross. I can't see a way she stays in
not
caucus.
Not the Conservatives.
Maybe to the NDP.
I mean, then what's the point in that?
I can't
see her crossing to the conservatives because, you know, that would be in every way opposed to everything that she's ever stood for and believed in. And I only know this because I have a connection to somebody who knows her, and I really can't see that happening. But, and if she goes to the NDP, like, fuck, why?
No, she could, I don't think she needs to.
Get reelected, and there'll be two of them in the House, but maybe she runs as an independent. I don't know. Sorry? What?
She doesn't need to cross. She can sit where she is and just let it come to her. Let it play out. Like, sometimes the best action is nothing. Like, she did exactly what she should do. She leaked, like, it came out that she disagreed. The prime minister doubled down and said, well, if she's so mad, then why is she still in my cabinet? And she left.
Yeah, that was
awesome. That is a boss move. And now what she needs to do is just let it come to her.
It's not a boss move. Yeah. That is petty.
It's a boss. No, it's petty.
Okay.
Boss.
All right. I say it's petty. I say that you don't have conversations with the prime minister of this country over the course of a few days while he's in British Columbia, assure him that you're fine, and then send him out to, and then embarrass the government yet again. I think it's
petty. But how much would you love it if somebody did that to her? With Andrew Scheer? How much would you love it, Cameron?
Oh, absolutely. My outrage is...
Like, we can't be partisan on this front.
But Cameron, did he not do that to her when he demoted her and then someone in his office obviously leaked that she's hard to work for?
Apparently, yeah, it was an open secret, though.
Okay, but I mean, listen, you're kind of... You're having your cake and eating it too here. Maybe she was in the... I mean, if this was cold revenge for something that happened in January, I respect her even more because that's even more boss.
Okay. So my last thing that I'm just going to add is when we talked about the media and petty Jody and how they're handling that.
Boss Jody.
Boss Jody. Okay. Oh, wait a second. By the way, just as an aside, we should really be finding a title for her because apparently it's a bad thing that the prime minister called her by her first name. That's apparently forbidden. So
how about Judge Jody?
Judge Jody? Yeah, I don't think she was ever a judge. How about we just call her JWR or Madam Wilson Raybould? But one of the things I was going to say about the way the media is handling
it. Where did you read that? I never read that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Some people were upset. They were trying to, because you know how people that have their own agendas try to make their agenda.
Oh, they're all saying it on Twitter. They're like, does anybody else want to like rip Trudeau's face off for having the gall to demean her by calling her Jody?
Cameron, when stuff happens on the internet, people always try to inflict their agenda into it, right? So, yes, there were people that were commenting that he was referring to her by her first name and implying that, you know, the feminist prime minister is not so feminist. But you just ignore that's just white noise. Just ignore that.
I don't even think that is true. But I do love Donald Trump didn't like it, apparently, that he called him Donald. But it seems like hard to believe that would have been an issue for her.
Well, Lisa Raitt brought it up yesterday, saying that she was very offended as a woman. That she would be called Jody.
Oh, so what the fuck? It's not Jody saying that then. It's Lisa fucking Raitt.
So
why are we paying attention
on the bright side? I think we should all give the applause, though, before we move on to a new topic. Real applause to the Conservative Party for finally giving a shit about an Indigenous woman.
I know.
Congratulations, guys.
Where were they the guy who executed Colton Bushy? It's funny. They were very quiet on that. Well, he had a right to execute him. He was on. He was a trespasser. Suddenly, I know. It's so laughable that the Conservatives are taking up the plight of poor Jody. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
As if you give a shit about the fact that she's an Indigenous woman.
No,
I do think, I don't think that this will defeat this government because I do think people see through the Conservatives on that stuff and how stupid they look and how hypocritical, because of course they would have been trying to get the same thing done for SNC-Lavalin.
Of course
they don't give a shit about her being an Indigenous woman who's been mistreated by Trudeau, allegedly. They don't give a shit. However, they got to contain it now. And I say you just let her fucking come out and say whatever she wants. But let her, and maybe she'll reveal herself to be the loon that they are sort of trying to suggest she is. I don't think it can really hurt them if they just let her come out and speak publicly. Do it.
So last thing I'll just say is
more risk is to her.
You want to talk about a boss move. So Jane Philpott tweeted the other day about about her friendship with Jody Wilson-Raybould. And she says, "You taught me so much, particularly about Indigenous history, rights, and justice. I'm proud of the laws we worked on together. C-14, which is assisted dying, C-37, harm reduction, C-45, public health approach to cannabis, and so much more. I know you will continue to serve Canadians." And then John McCallum, the now former ambassador to China, tweets in response, saying that Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott were a great team, quote, especially during assisted dying. I know somebody's like, what is that, a double entendre? Like, so great. Anyway, we will see, but Lance the Boyle, PMO. Okay. Let's talk quickly before we
Lance
close.
Lance the Boyle, exactly.
Let's talk about our master negotiator down south, because no episode of Canadian Politique would be complete without a little sojourn to the White House. So remember that huge shutdown a couple weeks back in the U.S. where Trump locked the U.S. government down, holding the country hostage for his $5.7 billion ask for the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, and then how Nancy Pelosi called it an immorality, refused to negotiate on a wall. So 35 days later, he buckles, signs a short-term appropriations bill to reopen the government till February 15th, which is tomorrow. Well, apparently the president, Donald Trump, Tiny Don, is poised to sign a bill, an appropriations bill that gives him, wait for it, $1.37 billion to finance 55 miles of barrier, well below the $5.7 billion he had asked for. And it's worth noting that the appropriations bill prevents Trump from building a cement wall or any impenetrable structure. And instead, he's going to be limited to the same types of barriers, for example, chain link fence and everything like that, that his predecessors have had to build. So this was the master negotiator. Also, just before we discuss real quick, the 700 miles of barrier along the 2,000 mile border that had been that's as much as been built, 700 miles, and it was all built under his predecessor. He has not built one fucking inch of wall since he's been in government. So what
you're
happened?
Missing a key point.
Sure.
The key point you're missing is when Trump shut the government down in the, like, so $1.6 billion is the regular U.S. budget for border security. So every year since the Obama administration, in the regular federal budget is $1.6 billion for border security. So when Trump shut the government down, $1.6 billion was on the table for border security.
Right.
And now it's $1.37 billion. So somehow the Democrats, not only did they not give him the $5.7 billion, but they managed to knock out like money off what was normally in the budget. So it's even funnier.
Master
negotiator. I love that he's trying to rebrand it now, too. He's such a tool. He's now stopped saying build the wall, and he's saying finish the wall as though the wall is already there. But apparently in El Paso the other night, he sort of went so far as to declare that just down the way, a big, beautiful wall right on the Rio Grande. And in fact, all that's happened there is some brush has been cleared.
And
that's it.
And funny enough, the El Paso mayor is a Republican. Oh, my God.
Oh, sorry. That's my name. Oh, Jesus, Parker. I'm minding my friend's dog. I apologize.
Jesus, Parker. That should be
it's a weird name for
Trump.
A dog.
Trump is not at the door trying to drag me to the wall.
No, I was going to say release the hounds. But I was going to say that the El Paso mayor is a Republican, and he actually came out and said that El Paso is not only one of the safest cities in America, not only does it not have a wall, but it didn't need one. So maybe people are waking up to this nonsense. But at any rate, we'll let you go and take care of Parker.
Yeah, I got to go let the dog
Thanks for the dynamic discussion, folks.
It was. It was good. You see how good we are, how smart we are. We know it all.
Well, at least one of us is, and that's you. Well, and you and Mike.
Yeah, hardly.
No, it's
hardly.
True.
You are too. We're all the smartest fucking people, aren't we? Let's just face it.
We are. All right. Thanks
okay,
all.
Bye.
Bye.